Welcome to the Uplifting Content Podcast. I'm your host, Ione Butler, and the founder of Uplifting Content. And every Tuesday, I'll share with you conversations with remarkable guests on a wide range of topics. My goal with this podcast is to introduce you to new people, ideas, and techniques that provide value and insight, which I hope you find uplifting. Today, let's talk about wellness, spirituality, and creativity.
It's our difficulties that make us experts in how to live. Why aren't we honest about that? You know, why doesn't the relationship expert say, I really, really sucked at my first two marriages, and this is what I learned. So I thought, if I ever write a book, I'm going to be honest, and I'm going to tell my story.
Today's guest is Elizabeth Lesser. She is a best-selling author, speaker, and the co-founder of Omega Institute, which is a renowned conference and retreat center in New York. Elizabeth has studied with spiritual teachers, healers, psychologists, and philosophers from other traditions all around the world. And in 2008, she helped Oprah produce a 10-week online seminar based on Eckhart Tolle's book, A New Earth. The webinar has been viewed by over 40 million people worldwide. She was a guest on The Oprah Show, a frequent host on Oprah's Soul Series, which is a weekly show on Sirius XM. She's also one of the Super Soul 100s, a collection of 100 leaders who are using their voices and talent to elevate humanity. So if she's good enough for Oprah, she's good enough for us. It was a really, really awesome conversation with Elizabeth. And in this episode, we talked about how she discovered spirituality, the Omega Institute, what it is and how it came about, taking your challenges and turning them into something good for the soul, this theory of rejection and attack, and how to have the courage to allow difficult people into our lives, and so much more. Enjoy this week's episode.
I love to kick off these conversations by asking my guest, what's your story? Anything that you want to share about you getting to where you are today? And I like to keep it open because it's fun to hear what people come up with.
Okay. Well, what is my story? What is your story, woman?
I can give you mine if you want to hear it.
Well, it's a long story now that I'm in my 60s. My goodness.
I'm looking gorgeous.
What's so interesting is that I was raised in a very intellectually, my parents were not religious. In fact, they were anti-religion, and they were very much into literature and culture and working for civil rights and voting and things like that. But I was born into a family of four girls, and for whatever reason, I do not know, I was born like with this spiritual hunger. Like, how come all these other people get to go to church or synagogue or something like that? I wanted it. Also, I was like obsessed with thinking about things like death and where do you go and where did you come from and what is this all about here? And so I would like tag along to Catholic mass with my next door neighbors, and from the youngest age started reading spiritual books. And of course, my family thought I was all crazy, and they still kind of do. And I, so by the time I got to college, even though I was, you know, very much influenced by my family and always involved in social justice kind of issues, I really wanted a spiritual path. And that was the time in America, all of these gurus were washing up on the shores and from the East. And I was like, I want one of them.
They sound great.
They sound just what I've been longing for. You know, I went to California and I found myself a teacher. And from the age of 19, I got very involved in what was new to the culture at that time, not so unusual now, things like meditation and yoga and all sorts of ways of keeping your body strong and healthy. I just loved it. I felt like I had finally come home to what I had longed for as a kid.
What was that like at that time? Because you're saying it was so new, and I've seen documentaries about these gurus that have come from India, and so I kind of have an idea of it. But you were kind of at the forefront of all of that. Was there? I mean, you mentioned that your family still think you're a bit crazy, but was there a lot of? California is quite open. I live in LA. Did you feel very different? Did it feel like a lot of people were sort of thinking you were strange for having this interest?
Definitely. It was definitely like on the fringe. It was stuff that now you would never think. I mean, you think of things like mindfulness meditation now, which is everywhere. It's in hospitals used for pain. It's going into public schools. Yeah. It's in every magazine and newspaper. And the same with yoga. I mean, you go to any town in America or all over the world, there's a yoga center. And of course, it's still, you can, find people who find it everywhere from horrifying to something to make fun of. But it is part of the culture now, as is thinking of food as medicine. Like back when, I remember when we first started Omega Institute in 1977. Mm-hmm. And at that time we didn't own our own campus and we were renting a college campus. And we asked the food service if they could serve tofu and miso. Mm-hmm. And they looked at us like we were saying, could you serve dirt and poison? They didn't know what we were talking about. And so things have really changed in the world. But it was the wild, wild west of all of that that time. But it was exciting. And because, especially when we started Omega, because I co-founded it with my then husband, who was a young medical doctor, I was a midwife and an educator. And we were really going about this with a strong sense of scholarship and medical background. I never felt like I was doing something to pull the wool over anyone's eyes. I was really a researcher and very interested in how does this work? Does this work? Mm-hmm. Does something like meditation or yoga or prayer, any kind of spiritual practice, does it make you happier and healthier and a better person, a kinder person? Does eating like this actually improve your health? Like we were really interested in what works and what doesn't work.
Right. So tell us a bit about Omega Institute, because my understanding of it now is it's you have live events, workshops, there's a big online training program, platform, and community. So back then when you started it, was that, obviously it wasn't as big as it is today, but were you doing it from more of a research perspective and then having people come in and join programs? How did it evolve?
It evolved because that guru I was talking about earlier, the one I wanted and found. He was a Sufi teacher from the Sufi tradition. He was from India. And at the same time, he had been educated in Paris and London, and he had fought in World War II. And he was a very sophisticated, brilliant European educated man. His name was Pir Vilayat Khan. And the Sufi tradition, which is the mystical dimension of Islam, he had really adapted it for Western culture. If all of you listening know the poetry of Rumi, Rumi was a Sufi. So it's a very universal tradition. He adapted it to the West. Mm-hmm. And part of the Sufi idea is that everything's connected in your life. You can't have a spiritual practice and not have a health practice or a commitment to making the world a better place. It's all connected to each other. Mm-hmm. So our teacher had this idea that we should start a school helping people have that holistic kind of training in life. Mm-hmm. You know, he felt that we're trained in just one of our intelligences, you know, our brain, our mind. And there's all these other intelligences, your body's intelligence, your emotional intelligence, mm-hmm. your spiritual intelligence, your communal intelligence. And so we need to be trained in it. And so we started it with that idea. Who in the culture right now is teaching all these different ways of becoming the best self you can be? And at that time, not many, the answer was. There were very few books about this. And so we would just go looking for, you know, at that time, like I remember the first time I got in touch with Deepak Chopra. He was a young intern at a hospital in Boston.
Wow.
He had just written a book. And he was thrilled that somebody might want to come listen to him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And people like that, like we just called them up and said, would you like to come and teach a weekend or 5-day training? And it was the kind of thing that hit at the right time.
Yeah.
And within like 2 or 3 years, we were running behind this large institution that we had no idea how to run. Well, we didn't know anything about hospitality or food service or anything, marketing. Yeah. And it taught us everything, you know. It's more than 40 years old now, and almost 30,000 people come through our campus every year, and 5-day trainings and weekend conferences and workshops, and as you said, online opportunities to learn and connect.
And are you, because you also write, you speak, you do a lot, are you involved a lot in the running of that or the teaching of that? What are you spending your time doing mostly these days?
I am not mostly running that organization.
Good. I was going to say that's probably very exhausting. You think you did your dues.
I did my dues. I mean, I'm still involved in certain programs that I'll help put together, and I am on the board of directors and I go to meetings, but it has a whole new wonderful committed younger staff, and you know, things, a place like that has to move and change with the times.
Right. So are you focused more on writing now then?
I am.
Yes. I would love to chat about one of your books that I am fascinated by, one about Broken Open, about how you can sort of overcome, or how these painful experiences can help you heal. Can you tell us a bit about that one?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things, having been exposed to so many teachers and authors at Omega over the years, and I was always like the wind beneath the sails of those teachers. I really enjoyed having no role myself except to like get the word out about these subjects and teachers. Mm-hmm. But one thing I learned so profoundly from being around them was that there's a kind of inherent contradiction and problem with spiritual teachers, which is people always teach that everyone has God within, that no one's more special than anyone else, and your life is holy and divine. But then we put these teachers up on a pedestal.
Right. And I always find that, yes.
And it's very destructive to everyone involved and kind of crazy making.
Yeah.
And so one thing I began to see was that every teacher who came to teach with us, and everyone I'd sit in on, and I sat in on more workshops than might be legal, let me tell you.
Mm.
And I really began to see everyone is the same. These teachers have screwed up lives just like I do. You know,
they're not perfect.
Perfect. Yeah. In fact, you know, I take note, oh, the relationship teacher, he's on his like fourth marriage. Or things like that. And I thought, oh yeah, it's our difficulties that make us experts in how to live.
Mm.
And why aren't we honest about that? You know, why doesn't the relationship expert say, I really, really sucked at my first two marriages, and this is what I learned. So I thought, if I ever write a book, I'm going to be honest, and I'm going to tell my story. Well, be careful if you say that, because when I decided to write about how difficult times help us grow, I realized I got to write about my own difficult times and how they've helped me grow. And I had gone through a very hard and, in my small world, public divorce. Mm. And who I was after that divorce was very different from who I was before. And I had worked very hard to try not to waste that devastating experience and become more bitter, closed, angry, but to become open and to become better and to learn lessons about how I'd been at fault, not only to blame, not to make someone the enemy. And so I started writing about that. And I wrote about other people who had used even more difficult times, loss of a child, illness, loss of a job, just about what does it take instead of to break down, to break open, walk through the fire. And it's an old subject, you know, it's the hero's journey.
Yeah.
How do you use trials and tribulations to become your true self?
Right.
And so that's what the book is about.
It sounds beautiful and beautiful. I'm excited because I'm working on a book called Uplifting Stories, which is like a modern day chicken soup for the soul, if you will. And it's also a collection of people's stories. And I've got one chapter on overcoming adversity. So now I'm really curious to listen to yours, because everyone that I've interviewed for the book, it's just so inspiring to hear how each person has dealt with it. I interviewed one young woman that was raped a couple of years ago while she was in France. And I said, you know, how did you overcome that? And she said, me and my family have suffered so much that I just know that this too shall pass and that I can get through it. And they'd lost her cousin, who was like her sister, died of cancer really young. And she said, you know, I knew that even though this horrible thing had happened to me, I'm alive. And I know that my mum is grateful that I'm alive, whereas my aunt doesn't have her daughter anymore. And just hearing all these things like this, it's nice that we don't all have to go for it to learn these lessons, and that we can sort of grow and learn from other people. So I really love
it. But you know, there's no one listening right now who has not or will not go through something really difficult.
Right.
And there's no like competition on what's more difficult than the other. I mean, life serves everyone. Hard times. And that hard time doesn't have to be something as catastrophic as being raped or losing a child. But we all lose everything. In fact, as we sit here, our body's getting older. We're confused. Things at work aren't going well. And to me, everything is practice. It's practice in letting go. Yeah. It's practice not only in this too shall pass, because that's a very important teaching, but also this too has come to me to teach me something. It's not just about letting it pass. It's about saying, what have you come to teach me? What can I learn? How can this make me a stronger, braver, more generous, more truthful person? And instead of blaming life or blaming someone else, you know, what can this beautiful problem do for my soul?
Right, right. Yes, and I think hearing these stories and hearing from you, because there are a lot of people that just can't, you know, it'll be about blaming other people, victim mindsets, not wanting to look at it from the what can I learn from this. And so all of these stories just give a more healing way of dealing with situations when they arise. So I just think that there, if you haven't had the experience, me learning from it is kind of me being primed for ways of dealing with it, being able to cope with it or deal with it in a hopefully a better way.
Yeah.
Powerful stuff. And you've got a new book out. When was Marrow out? Your other book, Marrow, was that recently?
2 years.
Oh, okay. So not too near. Okay. It's the latest one. I saw your TED talk with about your sister. I like that TED talk a lot. Can you tell us about Marrow?
Yeah. Marrow is a memoir about when my younger sister was diagnosed with lymphoma and needed a bone marrow transplant. And it turned out that I was the sister, the one person who was tested, who tested as her perfect match. That means all of our genetic markers lined up so that they could use my bone marrow to transplant into her body to hopefully cure her of her cancer. And when I researched what would go on in me and in her through the transplant, I found out that once she went through this horrible chemotherapy treatment that just about killed her, and then my bone marrow would be put into her, it would either work, or what wouldn't work would be if she rejected my bone marrow or my bone marrow cells attacked her. It's called rejection and attack. And I thought to myself, because I'm such a body, mind, spirit kind of gal, I thought, huh, rejection and attack. That is something we have done to each other our whole sisterly life. You know, siblings can love each other a lot, but also there's a lot of rejection and attack and bad behavior between siblings across a lifetime. So I said to my sister, like, why don't we try to clean up our relationship before the transplant in case that might help? And, you know, she definitely did not subscribe to my own mind-body belief system, but, you know, her life was in the balance, and she was excited to do this with me. So we went through several therapy sessions together where we pretty much visited every stage of our relationship and apologized to each other for times we had rejected or attacked each other. And there were some serious ones. And there were some little ones, like, why didn't you sit next to me on the bus at school? Yeah. But there were, you know, big ones, big periods in our life when we hadn't been there for each other. And it was an amazing experience. And what I took from it and what she took from it was this courage to have difficult conversations with the people in our life so as to be more intimate and to be more honest and clean. And it changed our relationship so much. It was so beautiful. And we had this amazing year together. Sadly, the cancer came back after a year and she died. So the book is also about the courage to really love, even though we know we'll lose each other. So that's what Marrow is about. But primarily it's about gaining the courage to be more authentic and vulnerable in relationship.
Yes, I think of all the people that are walking, carrying all this weight of relationships and unsaid things, and it must have been such a release for both of you just to be able to let go of that or share that or process that stuff. And all this weight that can be lifted off so many people's shoulders if we find that courage just to have those conversations. And it can be difficult. And so I think something like therapy is a great way, but I'm sure it's not easy for everyone to get there.
Right.
Friends and family into therapy.
And some people, it's not a good idea to do it with, you know, like I would, when I was on book tour, people would be like, well, does this mean I have to talk to my, like, brother-in-law who doesn't believe in global warming? And, you know, people would just like bring out like the person in their life they just cannot relate to. And I always say, like, listen, start small. Start with someone who does want to do this dance with you.
Yes.
Because it takes two to do the dance, and you can't make someone be intimate and authentic. You cannot force it, but we can try. And I always think it's better to err in the direction of connection as opposed to being scared or assuming that someone won't do it with you. You know, we make very limited assumptions of people, and I sometimes think of all of us grown-ups like teenagers at a dance where nobody is brave enough to invite the person, you know, everybody's like stands at the sidelines. And the first person to be courageous is a brave, brave soul to say, you know, even at work, like after a meeting, let's say some your feelings were hurt because someone said something. And instead of like harboring that feeling and making and turning it into something and holding onto a grudge, like right after the meeting, you go up and you say, hey, excuse me, when you said blah, 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 what did you mean? Because, you know, it hurt my feelings. Mm-hmm. And to give yourselves the chance in the moment to be human with each other, mm-hmm. to express hurt, or to ask for clarification. Those things may sound small, but they're really big.
Mm-hmm. Seeking understanding. There's so much, there wouldn't be conflict if we just sort of
That's right.
Understand each other. Yeah. Now, I just want to circle back quickly to the Omega Institute before we wrap up. And for anyone that maybe is new to spirituality or personal development, I mean, I think there's a lot of people that read books or have an interest. What are some of your favorite programs, or what would be a good start for a beginner? Because there's a lot that goes on with the Omega Institute. Are there some kind of your recommended ones that would be mm-hmm. good to pick off with?
Sure. I mean, the first thing is to broaden your concept of spirituality. You know, people often are like, well, I'm not really spiritual. and really, it's more a question of, I'd like to be more comfortable in my own skin. Mm. Or I'd like to come into my confidence, mm-hmm. my empowerment. Or I'd like to just connect with some people who are wanting to have a little deeper conversations than I'm used to. Mm-hmm. Also, we have a tremendous amount of work at Omega in creativity. I'd mm-hmm. like to write, I'd like to dance. I'd like to do stand-up comedy. We have lots of workshops like that. And I consider them quote unquote spiritual because they're just about coming into your voice, coming into your own skin, feeling more comfortable with life and yourself. But then we have more specifically mindfulness meditation workshops for all sorts of situations, just in general, for pain management, for children. We have lots of holistic healing classes, yoga, more kind of esoteric spiritual things like past life regression and things that are considered more classically mystical.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say the first thing is to like get in touch with your longing about what's missing in your heart and your soul and what you'd like to explore, and be a little brave. And then some people decide there's a particular teacher or speaker that they're interested in, you know, like, oh, I've read books by the Buddhist Pema Chodron and she's coming to Omega and like 700 people will show up for that. Mm-hmm. Whereas some of the workshops have 16 people in it and mm-hmm. it's much more skill based and intimate and psychotherapeutic. So our website is just chock full of different classes that you can look at through subject matter or teachers or date. And we run from May through October.
Mm-hmm.
So check it out. I mean, my favorites have all changed and grown over the years, you know, different times in my life. I've been interested in different things. So it's hard for me to choose just one.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. What does it feel like to have built this and created this and be helping so many people? Do you ever kind of take stock of that?
You know, it's really hard for me to take stock of it. I mean, I'm aware that Omega has over the years hundreds of thousands of people who have had their life hopefully bettered and enriched. But I, you know, I was 22 when I started it. So it's been my whole life, and it's kind of difficult to separate it from me. And so I'm grateful. Mostly I'm super grateful that I got to do the kind of work that has never bored me, never felt lacking in meaning.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, what's exciting for you that's coming up next?
Well, I'm writing a book now. It's called When Women Are the Storytellers. Ooh. And it's about how the old stories, whether we're talking about Adam and Eve or Pandora or the myths that still guide our culture, portray women in a way that still affects us, still makes us feel voiceless and lacking in a real deep connection to the sacred, because we've been painted as not that through our guiding origin tales. So I'm going back in and looking at those stories, but I'm also then talking about, well, what values would we bring forth as women if we had told the stories, and what stories are we telling now?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited about it. It's been difficult because gender is such a hot topic these days, and yeah. Everyone has such a different idea about what it means to be female, to be male. And so it's been really a fascinating couple of years working on this book.
It sounds, I was fascinated, was going to be the word that I was wanting to use too. When do you think you will have that ready? It sounds like a lot of research has gone into it as well.
Oh my God, I hope soon. When people say to me, I want to write a book, I'm like, be careful.
I know. I mean, mine is pretty straightforward in terms of just finding the people and speaking to them. But even that in itself is tricky. And so when it's like, you know, lots of history and all this, I'm like, wow, hats off to, I have such a huge amount of respect, more so now that I understand the process. When do you think you'll be able to publish it? How far along are you?
Well, it's supposed to be done this spring. So usually then it means about a year or more after that for all of the publishing work it takes.
Yes. Wow.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, all the best with that. And I will keep an eye out. But thank you so much for talking to us today. This has been lovely. I'm going to put the website for all your details down and Omega Institute, because I think it's just such a beautiful source of enrichment for so many people. And I'm like, where do I even want to start with a course now? There's just so many to choose from. So thank you for that.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Guys, that's been it for today. I look forward to seeing you or hearing from you to hear from me next week. Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Uplifting Content Podcast with me, Ione Butler. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on iTunes and leave us a review so that more people can find it. And to make sure you never miss a beat, subscribe to our weekly dose of uplifting content, which is an email from me about the best of uplifting content from that week, be it giveaways, videos, interviews, all the good stuff. And as a bonus, when you subscribe, you'll get 100 of our inspirational memes to share on your social media. The sign-up link is in the show notes. See you next time.